Young people are often credited or blamed for killing certain trends. Examples include real estate, American cheese, and now divorce might be joining the list. New analysis of U.S. Census Bureau survey data shows that young people, Generation X, and especially millennials, are getting married later and divorced less often. It's leading to an overall decline in the U.S. divorce rate, which dropped 18% between 2008 to 2016. Our next guest studies modern families and joins us to explore what this means for our culture. Stephanie Kuntz is a professor of history and family studies at the Evergreen State College in Olympia, Washington. She's also director of research for the Council on Contemporary Families. Stephanie, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you.
Well, what do we know about young people and when they do and don't get married?
Well, there's all sorts of interesting changes going on. The fact is that divorce rates have been falling for some time, contrary to popular opinion, but they're particularly falling for younger people, although part of that's because they're getting married at older ages. There have been a lot of changes in marriage patterns that seem to be contributing to the greater stability of marriage. One of that is the fact that people are getting married at older ages. And for every year, a woman postpones her first marriage right up to her 50s. With one little dip between the ages of about 35 and 37, she reduces her chance of divorce. The other thing is, of course, that more people are getting a college education, and that seems to be increasingly important for marriage today, both because it is increasingly the only route to financial security, and also because it demonstrates, you know, a certain maturity, a willingness to think things through, and negotiation is much more important to marriage than it used to be. There are a lot of other reasons, too, but I don't want to go on too long.
Sure. Well, I want to look at another part of that younger generation, though, where it's a different story, where people, especially people who aren't economically secure, are often not getting married in the first place, so obviously they're not getting divorced.
Yes, yes. That's another part of the selection factor. And that's there's a lot of good news, and I'd like to come back to the good news, some of the changing factors for divorce and versus the things that now keep a marriage stable. There's a lot of good news there. But that's the bad news that we're talking about. As our expectations of marriage have become much higher, as women have enough economic independence not to have to put up with abuse or other kind of problems in the marriage, but also at the same time as economic security has weakened for people without a college education, marriage has become a riskier enterprise than it used to be. It used to be that really it was your only way to settle down, and for a woman, the only way she could get some support from a man because she couldn't earn her own way. Now there's a question is when we compare investing in our own earnings power versus marrying someone that could end in divorce, who might not be willing to bear his or her fair share, people are very reluctant to get married. They also have higher standards for intimacy, and that's, I think, a good thing. We know that domestic violence has been falling dramatically because people no longer put up with this kind of behavior. But all of those things mean that for people under stress or chronic economic insecurity, marriage has become a great thing if you can marry someone who you can count on, but a risky thing if you, in fact, are going to be under that kind of stress that might lead to divorce.
Talking to Stephanie Kuntz from Evergreen State College in Olympia, Washington, looking at changing trends, divorce rates going down. We're also getting married at different times in different ways. And Stephanie, this is a part of the story I know you've been looking at a lot, and some amazing, just huge changes. Cohabiting, people living together, not married. Talk about how that's changed and how our attitudes toward that have changed.
Well, you know, it wasn't that long ago when it was just living in sin was just considered terrible. Today, only 17% of Americans disapprove of cohabiting before marriage. And the majority of marriages do begin with premarital cohabitation. Cohabitation is a complex subject because there's two types of cohabitation. One is the cohabitation of people who've known each other for a while, who think that they probably will get married, move in together, live together for a while, and then go on to get married. We used to think that cohabiting before marriage was a risk factor for divorce, but it turns out that that's not true. In fact, there are some segments of the population where cohabiting before marriage with the intent to marry actually improves your chances of the marriage staying together. But there's another kind of cohabitation, and that is when people are under economic insecurity and they need to move in together. They feel financially they'd like to get married. They're not quite ready financially, but they're also not able to maintain two households. And there, in that sector of the population, you get cohabitation occurring much earlier in the relationship with much greater possibility that it won't be a good match. And that in itself shows some of the changes. It used to be, back in the 1950s, the average couple who married knew each other for only 6 months. Today, that would be a huge risk factor for divorce because marriage is so much more individualized and requires so much more negotiation. So when people move in together too fast nowadays, they often don't proceed to marriage at all.
And Stephanie, something I've seen anecdotal reporting on, and maybe you'll know if there's data on how often this happens, where you'll see those cohabiting couples in economically insecure conditions breaking up, but they can't afford two rents. They're cohabiting post-breakup. Is that something we know about how widespread it is?
I don't know how widespread that is. Again, I've seen the anecdotal accounts, too, and as a historian, I know that this happened a lot during the Great Depression. I've interviewed people, oldsters I interviewed in the past, about living the Great Depression. Some of them talked about putting a curtain down the living room because they couldn't afford to move out. So the divorce rate fell madly in the Great Depression, but that didn't mean that marriages were better.
Now let's look at the baby boomers. As I understand it, they're the ones who drove these higher divorce rates. How are they doing now as they age?
Well, I think that it's true that the baby boomers did drive it, and I think that part of that was because they came of age in a period when gender roles were changing very, very rapidly, and women's expectations were rising more quickly about those changes than men's behavior. And I think that since that time, I think one of the reasons that divorce rates have stabilized is that men and women are adjusting to the new sort of rules of marriage and the new gender norms. And we, for example, know that men are up until the 1980s, if a woman had more education than her husband, that was a risk factor for divorce. If she earned more than her husband, that's a risk factor for divorce. Both those things are not true for marriages formed since the 1990s, and that's another reason why young people, I think, are doing so well. The baby boomers have had, many of them have had divorces earlier and then gone on to other marriages, some very successful, but once you've divorced once, it's easier to divorce again. And we saw between 1990 and 2010, we saw a tripling of divorces of couples aged 65 and older and a doubling of divorces of couples aged 50 and older. That's leveled off now. And I think there's some disagreement. Demographer Philip Cohen, who's a much more skilled at numbers than I, thinks we're going to see a continuing declining rate of divorce among older people. I'm not sure about that because older divorces are different than younger divorces. Older divorces are usually because you've just grown apart. You've got an empty shell marriage, and people nowadays are not willing to put up with that, and they have lots of alternatives outside of it. So I would say that anybody getting married now should recognize that marriage nowadays, our expectations of it are such that yes, your chances of divorce go down the longer you're married, but they don't disappear, and it's really important to keep working on that relationship in a way that might not have been in the past when people just felt like they didn't have any alternative.
We're talking to Stephanie Kuntz, professor at Evergreen State College in Olympia, Washington, and director of research for the Council on Contemporary Families, talking about declining rates of divorce and changing trends in marriage and divorce and living together in the United States. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, questions, and maybe your story. Have you and your partner lived together as a couple without getting married? Or because you're waiting to get married? Do you feel like people are judging you on that? Or is it just cool nowadays? Have you watched attitudes toward that change over the years? Are you seeing younger people in your circle choosing not to get married at all for whatever reason, economic or otherwise? Are you seeing people in your community, your group of friends getting married or divorced? What's your experience like? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up that conversation coming up on Central Time. We're picking up our conversation about marriage, divorce, and living together. Stephanie Kuntz is with us from the Evergreen State College in Washington. She's Director of Research for the Council on Contemporary Families. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What weighed on your decision on whether or not to get married, whatever generation you might be, or whether or not to get divorced? How about living together? And do you see a generation gap between you and your parents or kids or grandparents or grandkids generation on the decision to get married and how you think about it? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Stephanie, it seems like there's a lot of pressure on marriage. It's an economic unit. It's you're supposed to like each other, love each other. You're raising kids together. You're doing the logistics together. We put a lot of weight on a marriage. It's surprising in some ways you don't have more divorce.
It's true. I mean, the higher your expectations, the more possibility there is of disappointment. Now, I've heard some people say, well, we should lower our expectations of marriage. And having spent a lot of my time studying the history of marriage over thousands of years, I would say I would certainly advise against that, because low expectation marriages were often pretty miserable indeed. But I think that it is important to be realistic about our expectations. And I think that people are becoming more realistic, that instead of the romantic attraction of opposites, there is a sense that nowadays married couples should be friends. They should share interests. They should share skills and resources, not just specialize. And in fact, one of some of the most interesting research we have coming out is a total reversal in what seems to make people happiest in a marriage. For marriages formed in the 60s, 70s, and even early 80s, a traditional division of labor with the man doing most of the breadwinning and the woman doing most of the child care and the housework seemed to make people happiest. But for marriages formed since the early 90s, that's not true. The couples who share breadwinning, housework, and child care report the happiest marriages. They report the best sex lives, and they're the only couples having more sex than couples in the past. So these are all good news things. When you look around, it appears that we are beginning to adjust to these changing gender roles. But as you say, there is the economic expectation. It's very hard nowadays to have just a single provider family. People talk about how single parent families are having trouble, but one earner parent families are also having trouble. And so it becomes not only for your personal life and intimacy, becomes an economic issue of whether you're going to marry somebody who doesn't bring a load of debt and who is employable and willing to do their fair share.
Stephanie, in my head, big changes like that on this key cultural institution are things that happen really slowly, and it takes generations. It sounds like some of these attitudes toward living together, toward what makes a good marriage, have changed really pretty quickly in the scope of human history.
They have, and you know, it's been surprising just how fast they've changed. Some people, you know, I have friends who say, oh, it's so slow to change. My husband still says this to me, still doesn't do this. And I think, my goodness, when you look back at what marriage was like in the 1950s and 60s, and for my last book, A Strange Stirring, I interviewed women from those families and men, too, and what their marriages were like, the change is just kind of astounding. Yes, we have a ways to go. There are ways in which both genders hold on to older ideas that get in the way of their getting the most out of their marriages.
Let's go to our callers now. Raj is on the line in Eau Claire. Raj, hello.
Yes.
What did you want to bring up, Raj?
Yeah, I think I want to add a point where, my comment is on the discussion. Today's topic is the best thing to avoid all those, divorce or some kind of breakups and all. Communication is more important today's generation because what I do generally with my family, I keep on communicating every week how things going on, what we need to do next. Everything is fine. or we need something, or we need to work on something. Do I'm doing anything wrong, or do you want me to cut myself in some things? Or, you know, that is what I generally do with my kids and with, you know, with my wife. And I'm at the same time, I take feedback from the elders, like, you know, grandparents, like how you guys used to do, how you guys used to handle the situation.
All right, Raj, thanks a lot for calling in. Stephanie, are there studies on how couples communicate and how that affects the risk of divorce, or in a more positive way, how it benefits their success?
Well, of course, people need to communicate. They need to negotiate. One very interesting counterintuitive study showed that couples who bicker in the first 3 years of marriage actually are less likely to divorce and happier in the long run than couples who don't discuss these things. Because when you've got two people coming nowadays with pretty much equal resources, with a lot of experience, they're going to have to figure out how it works, and not just one person, as so many of the marriages that I've read about and that I interviewed people about in the 50s, with the woman saying, well, whatever you want, dear, whatever you want, dear. So, yes, communication is more important than ever. People have, you know, people don't have to fight fair. I mean, in fact, it's almost impossible, research shows, to fight fair when you're really angry. The most important thing is to be able to repair afterwards, to have more good exchanges afterwards, to have some humor when you've had a disagreement. But disagreements are going to be, they're absolutely important in marriages of equals, you know.
Raj, thanks for that call. We're talking to Stephanie Kuntz from the Council on Contemporary Families, looking at declining divorce rates, how younger people are getting married less often in some cases, later being a little more selective, and that's part of the story of divorce rates. Back to your calls. Sam is on the line in Eau Claire. Sam, hello.
Hey.
Hi, what did you want to bring up?
I was just wondering if your guest had any comments about how the legalization of gay marriage has impacted divorce rates in our country. I'm imagining there was a bit of a tidal wave in around about 2009 as different states and then the federal government legalized gay marriage. And I'm sure there are hundreds of couples that have been living together for decades sometimes who suddenly were able to turn what had been essentially a marriage into a legal marriage. And what does that do to the numbers?
Sam, thanks for the call. Stephanie?
Well, that's a very good question. I wish I could answer it, because we're just studying these things now. Of course, the fact that new marriages had in fact gone on for a long time, in one sense, reduces the divorce risk. On the other hand, as soon as you get more people marrying, you have more chance of divorce. So I think that's a great question that we're just going to have to continue to study. But one of the real benefits, it seems to me, of same-sex marriage is that same-sex couples have more experience than we heterosexual couples have of figuring out how to divide the roles at home and at work, not on the basis of gender stereotypes of what sex you are, but on the basis of who's good at what and who wants to do what and what's the fairest way to do that. And so in some ways they can provide a model for heterosexual couples.
Thanks for the call, Sam. Stephanie, I know it could be tough. Things are happening today, but we won't have the numbers on them in many cases for a couple few years from now. So that said, what kind of emerging trends are you watching for right now?
Well, you know, I'm a historian, and we hate to predict the future.
Right, I won't ask you to.
But I think that you've got two countervailing trends here. One really positive one is the increased, despite all the bad stuff that we read in the newspapers that is coming out, precisely because people are able to speak up more now, the changes in acceptance of gender equality are really quite impressive, and couples are doing marriage better, more fairly than ever in the past. Domestic violence rates have declined immensely. People are spending more time with their kids. They're collaborating more. These are all very good things. But just as we were talking about at the beginning of the program, you have this other thing where socioeconomic trends are going in the opposite direction, dividing us, making people feel more insecure. There was a study recently by some psychologists who found that the best predictor of negative interactions between couples is not their family background, their values, you know, whether they were products of divorce themselves, but how much economic tension and stress they're under. So that's always, that's a real threat to marriage.
And Stephanie, as you mentioned, you've looked at marriage over long periods of time in the United States and elsewhere. Have you seen anything like we're seeing in the United States and maybe some other countries around the world in the present?
Well, there's a lot of things that we've seen in the past that have come around in new forms, but actually this is really unheard of. Never before in history have we tried, as many people are trying today, to develop a marriage system that is not based on coercion, on whether it's by parents or by social approval or by economic necessity, that is based upon real individual choice and is based upon equality and exchange between couples, where every member of the family, both the adults and the children, are expected to be valued equally. This is a huge social experiment. I think it's a wonderful one. But it's no wonder it takes us a while.
It's a good place to leave it. Stephanie, thanks a lot for joining us again.
My pleasure.
We've been talking to Stephanie Kuntz, professor of history and family studies at the Evergreen State College in Olympia, Washington. She's also director of research for the Council on Contemporary Families. And there's still time for you to share your stories and your observations when it comes to marriage, divorce, and living together in the modern United States. We just heard Stephanie say this is, in many ways, unprecedented, a social experiment, one that she likes. How is it playing out for you and your family? Did you cohabit, live together before getting married, instead of getting married? How did that work for you? What do you think of that change in American attitudes toward cohabitation? You can let us know, email ideas@WPR.org, or you can always tweet us @CentralTimeWPR.